Welcome. You're listening to a sermon podcast from Oak Hills Church in Folsom, California.
Well, if you'd like to turn to 2 Corinthians 12, that is our scripture reading today, I'd ask you to stand as I read it. I'm going to read verses 7 through 10 from this letter that the Apostle Paul wrote. It's on page 1165. Just to set this up, I'm only reading four verses, but the first six or so verses of this follow on a bunch of verses in chapter 11, where Paul is talking a lot about boasting and what it is that he boasts in. And in the first part of chapter 12, he talks about these visions and revelations, and everybody who reads this stuff and digs into it believes he had these visions and he had these revelations. And it actually says he was taken up to paradise and he saw things and heard things that are inexpressible. So that's sort of the context, and I want to read verses 7 through 10 of 2 Corinthians 12. Doesn't seem like 7 is where I want to start. Yes, middle of 7, here we go. Therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me, but he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong." This is the word of the Lord. You may be seated. Well, the past few weeks, I was off on vacation, and Julie and I, during that time, had the chance to do some traveling. I was able to golf a number of times, which golf is always fun for me as long as I play halfway decent. A lot of unformedness in me comes out when I don't play golf well, but that's another topic. But these past few weeks have been unusually restful and restorative to me. I was telling somebody over the past couple of days, I really don't remember, maybe during my sabbatical, but since then, I don't remember being as relaxed, as restored, having such a marvelous time away, but also really excited about coming back. The whole three-week time far exceeded my hopes, and this is kind of true confession, I still have quite the relaxed buzz going. So I'm warning you, I guess, about where I'm heading today. It was a really refreshing few weeks. As I said, I'm glad to be back. We have an exciting fall ahead of us. You heard about the 40 On celebration, September 28th and 29th. Youth group is back in action. Children's ministry is gearing up. All sorts of things, these community groups, a chance for people to get together in each other's homes, make connection, build relationship, and on it goes. So it's an exciting time as we enter back in. But today, as Jordan mentioned, we're ending this series. And the relaxed buzz I'm still experiencing, I'll just tell you, has severely shaped today's topic and how I want to approach it. And perhaps you can relate to this. Pulling away from the daily demands and routine, sometimes, not always, but sometimes has a way of quieting down the urgent things that are always screaming at us in life, sort of putting them in their place and reminding us of the essential things, the important stuff that comprises the foundation of our lives and of our faith. And over the past few weeks, among many other things, I went on several incredible hikes across beautiful terrain surrounded by absolutely jaw-dropping scenery. Now, hiking itself was an amazing gift given my back troubles over the last several years. There was something in all that, maybe someday I'll talk about, that God showed up and just really incredible stuff happened. But while I was alone on these trails, soaking in the beauty, an essential of life and faith stirred in my soul many times, and it was God's grace. Grace as a theological reality, grace as a divine attribute, a characteristic of who God is, but mostly grace as an ongoing experience in my life over many years. It just kind of stirred and surfaced over the past few weeks, and I cannot really explain all the reasons why. But these amazing hikes, these amazing golf courses I had a chance to play, and these wonderful interactions I had with family members and friends stirred up in me a profound sense of gratitude and joy for God's marvelous grace and the way it has been poured out so abundantly in my life for so long. But here's the thing. For the 40 years that I have been a follower of Jesus, God's grace has usually baffled me and made me go, huh? I realize that sounds just about like something a pastor would say. So I hope you know that that's not why I'm saying it. The shame I have lugged around for much of my life, I suppose, has always made God's grace hard for me to receive, hard for me to experience, and hard for me to live into. I mean, I get grace, at least on paper. But grace often makes me just scratch my head and go, huh? I don't get it. I don't understand it. But the past few weeks, as I mentioned, on several occasions, for reasons I don't know, I felt like I was standing in a torrential downpour of God's grace. So I want to talk about grace today as we wrap up this series. Now, grace is not exactly a novel idea to those who are familiar with the Christian faith. It's well known, and frankly, it is well worn. And this is what makes grace so ignorable, so yawnable, if you will. We've mostly heard the grace pitch. Most of us have heard the grace pitch many times. The word itself, grace, God's grace, may immediately evoke within us some kind of definition or a picture or an understanding or a set of ideas as to what it means and why it matters. In other words, for many of us, grace may not be so much of a huh with a question mark as it is a eh with a shoulder shrug. Because we've heard it. We know it. We get it. So maybe some of you are thinking, Mike, let me see if I understand this. You go away for 3 weeks, and all you got for us is grace? Really? And I say, yes, really. The Apostle Paul was a brilliant scholar who thought he knew most of what there was to know about God and God's plan, until one day he unexpectedly ran into the resurrected Jesus on a dirt road, and the Apostle Paul was never the same again. For the rest of his life, he marveled at the grace of God. He pondered God's grace without being able to fully comprehend or explain it. He calls it the incomparable riches of his grace in Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 7. And based on what our Bibles teach us, I believe the Apostle Paul continues to this very day to marvel and ponder God's grace without being able to fully comprehend or explain it. So my hope today is to unclip the leash on this grace and let her run freely into the circumstances, situations, hardships, and difficulties of our lives and pains and relationships, to refresh our souls and ignite our imaginations with the wonder of God's grace. Let's talk first about the fact that we are grace recipients. The New Testament was written in what is called everyday Greek. Greek spoken out in the streets. And the Greek word for grace is charis, or charis, depending on how you want to say it. Like charis from Silence of the Lambs. So you have charisma, charismatic, Eucharist, all rooted in this word grace. It's a rich word with many layers and textures, but I want to talk about grace today as best I can in street language, what it looks like, what it does. More than crusty definitions, it seems to me, to keep it fresh, we need pictures and stories of grace to begin to grasp anew its magnitude and magnificence. A sip of good Cabernet, for some people, tastes like grace. A well-written paragraph, for some people, sounds like grace. A child at play with her mom looks like grace. A beautiful landscape on a warm summer day feels like grace. A perfect drive down the middle of a freshly cut fairway looks and sounds and feels like grace. Maybe I'm pushing this a little too far, I get it. But grace indeed has this aesthetic beauty to it that stretches beyond the limits of human language. Definitions help, but don't do it justice. The word grace suggests kindness, not just any sort of kindness, off the charts kindness, inexplicable kindness. This doesn't make sense. Kindness. So in the Bible, we can say grace is God's abundant generosity and kindness toward those who are undeserving of any generosity or kindness. Romans chapter 3 is an example. For all have sinned and fall short of God's standard and are justified freely by his grace. In 1 Timothy, Paul says this amazing thing as he's writing to this young pastor. He says, the grace of our Lord was poured out on me abundantly. This is one place in 1 Timothy where we can kind of feel Paul grasping for words to describe the indescribable. See, God's grace is his abundant favor expressed in a million different ways to people like us who don't deserve it. Or as James 1:17 puts it, every good and perfect gift comes from above. Now, some of us learned a simple definition of grace 1,000 years ago in Sunday school or wherever, and we learned the definition as unmerited favor. This is one of those things when the word gets mentioned, for some of us, the phrase that just jams into our brain, unmerited favor. Grace is unmerited favor. And it certainly is favor, and it most definitely is unmerited. It is 120% gift, unearned, undeserved, unwarranted. And every single one of us in this room right now, whether we are a person of faith or not, has been the recipient of God's unmerited favor. Our very existence, the fact that we were born, the fact that we are alive, the very breath in our lungs is a demonstration of God's grace. Every good gift we have is an expression of God's grace to us. See, the more we understand grace, the less we understand it. And the more we simply say, huh? Paul's fascination with grace was not because it was such a complex and beautiful word, but because he had experienced the beauty of grace and it literally shook him to the core and changed him and his life forever. He knew in his bones that not only was he undeserving of God's grace, he was entirely deserving of God's punishment. And when God drenched Paul with his grace, he never recovered. Something like what we are talking about washed over me the past few weeks in a fresh way. And again, I don't know why. I can't explain it. But it washed over me again. And I realized, again, we don't recover from God's grace. We're never the same. Grace's influence obviously doesn't happen all at once. I'm not suggesting that we just sort of walk thereafter with our feet not touching the ground because we're so enraptured and carried along by grace and our eyes are kind of fuzzy and our face is sort of far away. I'm not implying that at all, but we are never the same. And if we stay with grace and in grace, we never recover. The world never looks the same. The tensions in the world never look the same. The world never feels the same. Obviously, all of this ebbs and flows. We get distracted. We get preoccupied. We get stressed. Our eyes look at what's right in front of us and we lose the big picture. But in the purest sense, when we encounter grace, we never recover from it. In the stories of grace we find in the Bible, in real life, and in our own lives, the outsider is welcomed in. The forgotten one that nobody thinks matters is included. The unimportant one is celebrated. The broken are healed. The lost are found. The untouchables stay away from us, are touched. The lonely are comforted. The less thans are dignified. The hopeless are consoled. The sinners are set free. In a phrase, the dead are raised to new life. So, more specifically, an adulteress facing execution encounters God's grace in the person of Jesus Christ, and she walks away and she is never the same again. A crooked tax collector spends the afternoon with Jesus and everything changes forever. A disciple of Jesus, a friend of Jesus, fails at the crucial moment and is beating himself up because he denied even knowing Jesus, but Jesus' grace restores him. A condemned thief with only a few seconds remaining in his life encounters God's grace and is forever changed. Let me ask you, what is your story of grace? As you think about your life, whether you are old or middle or young, what is your story of grace? How has God poured out his grace and rerouted you and rerouted your life? Sometimes I will find myself thinking, what would I be and where would I be if God's grace had not found me? Where would I be today? See, we are the recipients of this immeasurable and indescribable grace. And just to be clear, we didn't deserve it, not even a little. We didn't earn it, not even a little. We are the tax collector. We are the thief on the cross. We are the prodigal son, the prodigal daughter. We are the leper. We are Peter the denier, Judas the betrayer, the woman caught in adultery. We are the dead person walking. We are the outsider, not figuratively, not metaphorically, but literally and actually. And then God opened the door and invited us in. Now, I realize grace is hard for some of us. As I mentioned, it's been difficult for me. I realize rejection is easier than grace for some of us because rejection echoes and reinforces the chorus of voices within us that tell us we don't matter. I realize some of us have built in and built up resistances to God's grace. Nonetheless, even a brief glance at God's grace shows how valuable we are to him, how much we matter to him. Let me be more personal about it. How much he cares for you. How much he loves you. Now, I don't want us to pretend that any of this is landing or that any of this changes us in this moment. But just standing in the flow of this, just reflecting on what's the Bible trying to tell us about this? And it's clearly trying to tell us that we are valuable to God. God has done well by you. Someone many years ago said this phrase to me, and it just bounced off me. How does that phrase land on you? Can you hear yourself saying it? God has done well by me. Or do you fight with that? Perhaps even now, you're rifling through various counter-arguments. But here's the thing, because God is gracious and kind and good, every one of us can say, God has done well by me. Let's talk then about grace in real life. Sometimes we think of grace only as it relates to guilt and sin and forgiveness. So grace is theological, grace is intellectual, and its main application has to do with our salvation and what happens after we die. And obviously, grace has much to say about these things, but grace encompasses more than sin and forgiveness and post-death destinies. Grace is the beginning, middle, and end of the biblical story. In John 1:16, Jesus said, "Out of his fullness we have all received grace in place of grace already given." Now, I don't really know what that means. It's kind of confusing. But it seems to imply grace is the start of the story, the point of the story, the theme of the story, and the end of the story. Throughout his letters, Paul describes the power of grace actively at work in the details and particulars of life and hardship and difficulties and relationships. Grace is a dynamic force, in other words, in the real life stuff we deal with. So Paul had some sort of weakness in his body, literally some kind of weakness, brokenness, something or other in his actual body. Some think it was bad eyesight. Others think he had a bad leg and he walked a certain way. Maybe he had a proclivity toward depression or discouragement, so it was emotional or psychological, or some other kind of persistent frailty plagued his mind or his body or his circumstances. And the point is, he was burdened by this pain. So, we read in our reading, he earnestly prayed that God would heal him by removing this thorn in his flesh, as he calls it in our passage. But God didn't heal him. God didn't heal the Apostle Paul of this thorn in his flesh. I think it's good to pause here. If all this grace talk feels nice and churchy, but a tad bit removed from reality, we are now standing at a door that leads into the real lives we actually live in this broken and fallen world. Paul experienced pain, and he prayed fervently for it to be healed, but it wasn't. Now, who of us sitting here can't relate to that? Health, marriage, the past, some wound that won't go away, some nagging physical ailment or pain, some unspoken dream or desire that remains unfulfilled, and within us we think, it's never going to be fulfilled. A lingering anxiety we can't shake. And along the way, we've prayed for healing. We've asked others to pray for healing. We've asked others to pray for the pain to relieve, for the thing to change, but God doesn't answer the way we want. Who can't relate to that? God responded to Paul in verse 9, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in your weakness." That whole idea makes me go, huh? With wonder, with anger, and with confusion. Therefore, Paul says, "I'll brag about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me." That is why he says, "For Christ's sake, I delight," or "I'm content in weaknesses, hardships, difficulties, insults, because when I am weak, then I am strong." Candidly, my opinion, he's out of his mind. He sounds nothing like the modern perspective where power and strength mean conquering and winning, being great and being first. Paul says that in God's economy, power and strength come by surrendering to the all-sufficient grace of God that is actively working in the lives of those who belong to him. He speaks of grace here and in many other places in his letters, then, like waves of the ocean on an unguarded shore. Impact, influence, long, slow shaping is inevitable. When God says, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness," he's not talking about the weakness of our guilt or the weakness of our sin or the issue of forgiveness. He's talking about the specific weakness in Paul's body or mind or circumstance, whatever it might have been, and how God's grace was sufficient to meet and sustain him in that life challenge. It is grace in real life stuff. See, in the New Testament, in addition to grace meaning something like undeserved favor, it also means influence. It means power. Grace is a powerful force that operates in the lives of those who trust Jesus. It is active and at work in the details of our inner being and in our hardships and in our situations. Think about this. In 2 Corinthians 12, 7 through 10, the passage we read, we find the following players in that passage. Three of them. We find God's grace, we find human weakness, and we find Jesus's power. And all three of these interact and commingle. God's grace, our weakness, and Jesus's power. My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in your weakness. The word power here is the street level Greek word dynamis. Comes from where we get dynamite. It's explosive. It rearranges things. It's able to affect change. So let me say it this way. Grace is the action of God in our weaknesses to accomplish what we cannot do on our own. Grace is God acting in us and with us to bring forth something out of our weaknesses that is not our doing. This is the invisible, the divine, the spiritual intersecting right where we are in real life stuff. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 11, verse 30, this astounding thing. He says, if I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. Think about that. You want me to brag? You want me to talk about how wonderful it was to be caught up into paradise and to see all this stuff and hear all this stuff? He says, if I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. You ever wonder if the idea of authenticity and vulnerability is in the Bible? I direct you here. Why would he boast about the things that show his weakness? Because that's where God's powerful grace meets, shapes, and changes. Now, you probably don't have to think very hard or for very long to identify an issue in your life that is bigger than you and beyond you. I'll just take it right out of here. His grace is sufficient because his power is on display and at work and active in your weakness and through your weakness. So let's sit here for a few more seconds and just ponder this idea of sufficient grace. Paul prayed for healing in his body, and God's answer was, my grace is sufficient for you. And that wasn't the bumper sticker slogan. It wasn't a message about sin or about guilt or about forgiveness. It was a teaching about God's grace at work in Paul's body and mind and situation to sustain him through the physical or emotional or relational pain he was experiencing. Verse 9, his power is made perfect in our weakness. That's the quintessential, our frailties, your brokenness, your hurts, are the setting for the power of Christ, this is the phrase he uses, to rest on us. And this word rest literally means to make one's quarters in. It means to live in. So our weaknesses, frailties, brokenness, hurts are precisely where the power of Christ wants to take up residence within us and do his transforming work. And here's the thing, nothing is beyond his reach. Nothing is too far gone. Nothing is bigger or more powerful than God's transforming grace at work within us. And this is why Paul embraces his weaknesses, actually boasts about them, opens them to God, because when he is weak, when he names his weaknesses, when he owns them, and when he holds them before God, God's power moves in him, intangible, concrete and transformative ways. Again, just sit here in the, huh? What? Paul is in pain. Something in his body or mind or situation hurts or doesn't work or isn't the way he wants it to be. Imagine 91.5% of us can relate to that. So he prays, and God replies, "My grace is sufficient for you." Here's my response to that response. I don't want your grace. I want this ailment fixed. The word sufficient here means enough. Think about it. My grace is enough for you. My grace, my power is enough for you. It might heal you. It will sustain you. I heard someone say once that this phrase, "My grace is sufficient for you," means that no matter our situation, no matter what happens, we are adequately cared for by God. Now, if I said that and I were listening to me, I'd be like, "Would you stop?" But this is a person who says stuff like this, and you hear them say it, and something in you says, they actually believe that, and they've actually lived that. No matter what happens, we are adequately cared for by God. Let that grace run freely into the particulars of your life right now. No matter what happens, you are adequately cared for by God. See, the reason that Peter and Paul, I suppose I should say, and Mary and many others down through history, the reason they held their lives and their future so loosely is because they believed God's grace was active in their circumstances and it was sufficient for them. It was enough, no matter what happened. Now, again, this all sounds pathetically religious. So what does it actually look like? What does it look like to live in the sufficiency of God's grace no matter our circumstances? Perhaps an issue or two has arisen in your head as I've been working my way through this. What does it look like to live in the sufficiency of God's grace in that situation? I'm sure there are many ways to describe it, but I think one way is captured in the word relaxed. People who live in the sufficiency of God's grace are relaxed even when life is not relaxing. And I haven't met many who consistently demonstrate this reality. I don't consistently demonstrate this reality. The few people I have met who live in grace seem relaxed regardless of their situation. And I mean actually, genuinely relax. They're at ease with themselves. They're at ease with the future. They're at ease with the outcome. They're not overly stressed or overly burdened. They wear their troubles lightly. Let me ask you to close your eyes for just a second, and I'm going to end with this. There's a picture that starts to emerge here through what Paul is saying. And it is a picture of a different kind of life. It's a picture of a life so integrated with God and with his presence and with his power that even as we live and move and have our being in this world, we are living and moving and having our being in another world. There's a picture that emerges here of a very passionate, very committed, very rigorous man named Paul who lived a life of sacrifice and he poured himself out for the sake of others, but he did it in a way that over time and with God's help, all that was integrated with God and with his presence and with his power. And given the nature of life in this broken world, the hardships, the sufferings, the tensions, it's so very good for us to step back and remember something. Just step back and remember it. Step back from the issue you're facing. Step back from the issues our nation is facing. Step back from the tension around this election. Step back from the chaos. Not because it doesn't matter, but just step back for just a moment and remember, God is great and God is good. And His grace is sufficient because His power is made perfect in our weakness. And it is actually possible for you and for me to live in the midst of the chaos and the hardship and the difficulty and the pressure. It's actually possible to live in it with the power of God's grace operating in us, holding us steady, sustaining us, carrying us, relaxing us. Even when life is not relaxing. So our good and great and gracious Heavenly Father, thank you for the way in which you remind us that you are the one who is the King. You are the one who is over all. These lives we live, these bodies we inhabit, these relationships we have, these dreams we pursued, sometimes, maybe often, don't pan out. And today, together, we bring these things that rattle within us. And we want to be people who hold these things loosely with our eyes fixed elsewhere. We want to be people who live passionately and committed in this world, drawing upon resources and strength and power from your world, from your presence. We thank you that on this day that we can remember in the midst of all the wows and the huhs that you are King, that you are good, and you are magnificent and beyond words and beyond description. And so today we sit and we rest and declare and proclaim your great name. We thank you, we receive your grace, and we thank you for it. In Jesus' name.